Today, the inflation story's shock horror. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Worth noting, this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, after last week's downside surprise on jobs, the markets were rocked by an upside surprise on inflation. According to the Bureau of Labour, the Consumer Price Index for all urban consumers, the so-called CPIU, increased 0.8% in April on a seasonally adjusted basis, after rising 0.6% in March. Over the last 12 months, the All Items Index increased 4.2% before seasonal adjustment. This is the largest 12-month increase since a 4.9% increase for the period ending September 2008. The Consumer Price Index, the CPI, measures the change in prices paid by consumers for goods and services. The CPI reflects spending patterns for each of two population groups, all urban consumers and urban wage earners and clerical workers. The all urban consumer group represents about 93% of the total US population. And the CPIs are based on prices of food, clothing, shelter, fuels, transportation, doctors and dentist services, drugs and other goods and services that people buy for day-to-day living. Prices are collected each month in 75 urban areas around the country from about 6,000 housing units and approximately 20,000 retail establishments, including department stores, supermarkets, hospitals, filling stations, and other types of stores and service establishments. All taxes directly associated with the purchase and use of items are included in the index. Prices of fuels and a few other items are obtained every month in all 75 locations. Prices for most other commodities and services are collected every month in the largest three geographic areas and every other month in other areas. Prices of most goods and services are obtained by personal visits or telephone calls by the Bureau's trained representatives. In calculating the index, price changes for the various items in each location are aggregated using weights, which represent their importance in the spending of the appropriate population group. Now, the biggest factor behind the jump appears to be a 10% rise in prices for used cars and trucks, which was in turn due to various factors such as the reopening of more of the economy, an aversion to using mass transit amid lingering infection fears, and a shortage of inventory from the auto industry because of the global chip shortage. That rise was the biggest since the government started tracking it back in 1953, and it accounted for just over one-third of the seasonally adjusted increase in the overall price level. Other items that the Department of Labour Statistics use had a big impact on the numbers too. They included housing, airfares, recreation, vehicle insurance, and housing furnishings. The food index increased in April, rising 0.4%, as the indices for food at home and takeaway from home both increased. The energy index decreased slightly, as a decline in the index for gasoline in April more than offset an increase in the indices for electricity and natural gas. The index for all items less food and energy rose 0.9% in April, and that's the largest monthly increase since April 1982. Nearly all major component indices increased. Along with the index for used cars and trucks, the indices for shelter, airline fares, recreation, motor vehicle insurance, and household furnishings and operations were among the indices with the largest impact on the overall increase. And so the overall index rose 4.2% for the 12 months ending April, a larger increase than the 2.6% increase for the period ending March. Similarly, the index for all items less food and energy rose 3% over the last 12 months, a larger increase than the 1.6% rise over the 12-month period ending in March. The energy index rose 25.1% over the last 12 months, and the food index increased 2.4%. Businesses can't keep up in demand, a problem exacerbated by ongoing bottlenecks in the global trading system tied to the pandemic. Computer chips are especially in short supply, and that's held up the production of new autos and other manufactured goods. Americans are also rushing to dine out, travel, or go far away for vacations, activities they shied away from during the pandemic. That's also driving up prices at popular vacation resorts and other venues where people plan to congregate. But now if you look at real average hourly earnings for all employees, which was also released, that was unchanged from March to April, according again to the labour statistics. This result stems from an increase of 0.7% in average hourly earnings, offset by an increase of 0.8% in the consumer price index for all urban consumers. Real average weekly earnings increased 0.2% over the month, due to no change in real average hourly earnings, combined with an increase of 0.3% in the average work week. Real average hourly earnings decreased 3.7% seasonally adjusted from April 2020 to April 21. The change in real average hourly earnings, combined with an increase of 2.3% in the average work week, resulted in a 1.4% decrease in real average weekly earnings over this period. And then the New York Fed, in parallel, released their underlying inflation guide, their UIG. The price's only underlying inflation gauge is derived from a large number of disaggregated price series in the CPI, while the full dataset measure incorporates additional macroeconomic and financial variables. The UIG full dataset measure for April is currently estimated at 2.7%. That's a 0.5 percentage point increase from the previous month. The price's only measure for April is currently at 2.9%, a 0.3 percentage point increase from the previous month. And the 12-month average in the April CPI was 4.2%. That's a 1.6 percentage point increase from the previous month. And for April 2021, trend CPI inflation is estimated to be somewhere between 2.7% and 2.9%. The width of the range is smaller than in March, with both bounds higher than they were in March. And note that the COVID-19 outbreak continues to impact data collection for the CPI release. So now, standing back, as Bloomberg put it, in Star Trek, in the 24th century, if people want food, they just yell at a replicator to make some tandoori chicken or something and it pops out. But here, in the dark ages of the 21st century, the food and other stuff we want must be tediously produced and transported to us. And sometimes it gets stuck in the Suez Canal or the Colonial Pipeline or wherever. And then we have to pay a bunch more money to get it. This can, of course, be called inflation, but that's a loaded word these days. So there's the, oh no, my tandoori chicken is stuck in the Suez Canal inflation. And then there's the 1970s death spiral inflation. Right now, we appear to be experiencing the Suez Canal kind, with supply unable to meet a surge in demand, pushing CPI to its biggest gain in 12 years last month. The Fed, our inflation doctor, tells us not to worry about this lasting. But Mohamed El-Arin warns that after too many months like this, people might start to think we're going back to the days of whip inflation now buttons and double-digit mortgage rates. Just as the gasoline hoarding we warned you not to do made gas shortages a self-fulfilling prophecy, inflation fears can fuel inflation. The Fed can't let such psychology take root, Mohamed writes. And if inflation is a forest fire, then there's a lot of kindling on consumer balance sheets, writes Brian Chepetta. New Fed data showed Americans took a stimulus-enhanced surge in income and paid down credit card debt, leaving them with massive spending power for when the economy normalizes. That could give businesses pricing power to match. Higher inflation naturally means higher interest rates. Declaring the end of the bond bull market has been a losing game for the past several decades. But, Bill Dudley argues, it's really dead bull meat this time, with 10-year Treasury yields likely to double from here. Hedge funds have loaded up on higher rate bets to at least guard against any tantrum the bond market might throw when the Fed starts to cut off its money supply, writes Mark Gilbert. But what if the Fed doesn't mind all this inflation talk at all? How soon we forget roughly two decades of worrying about deflation and how utterly our inflation doctor failed to raise the economy's blood pressure. In fact, the Fed welcomes your inflation fears, Carl Smith writes. It has declared it's targeting an average rate of long-term inflation not seen in years. Sticking to this plan and riding out any Suez Canal inflation will fend off a bond tantrum and, more important, avoid snuffing out the recovery and sending us back to even darker ages. And now, of course, Mohamed A. El Arim is a Bloomberg opinion economist, and he wrote that the two big macroeconomic data surprises over the past few days should encourage greater humility and open-mindedness in the way policymakers, economists, and Wall Street analyzes the US economy. If they don't, they will significantly increase the risk that a policy mistake, a market accident, or both will derail what should and needs to be a long period of high, inclusive, and durable growth. The disappointing jobs news from last week and Wednesday's much greater than expected surge in inflation have more in common than just embarrassing many economic forecasters. They also suggest, and I use suggest because it would be foolish to draw any firm conclusions based on a single month's data, that widespread supply rigidities are accompanying what, according to the overwhelming majority of other macro and micro data, is a big step up in the scale and scope of aggregate demand. Indeed, the two are linked. Historically, economists have found it difficult to predict structural change in the supply side of the economy, especially when the demand side is incredibly fluid. The possibility that both the supply and demand side of the economy are evolving structurally is something that we should have an open mind to, and it is also something that calls for a significant degree of humility. Yet, the Federal Reserve in particular remains highly vocal in asserting again and again that the increase in inflation is just transitory, a conviction that is not actually supported by the evidence, he said, at least as of now. With that, the central bank is showing absolutely no inkling of a desire to reassess a policy approach that has remained steadfastly unchanged and seemingly little challenged internally, despite accumulating macro and company-related evidence that indicated it would be prudent to consider a broad range of possible economic and policy outcomes. The big hope is that Fed officials will be proved right in their call on transitory inflation and help deliver a smooth transition for the economy, markets, and policymakers. The risk is that the Fed will fall behind, forcing the markets to start a more disorderly process that could risk economic well-being and unsettling financial instability. If nothing else, the recent data suggests the Fed, as well as Wall Street analysts, should be thinking much more in terms of scenarios rather than a single baseline that they hold on to with an enormous degree of conviction that is not supported by sufficient foundation. And if they were to open their mindset more, they would probably soon abandon the notion of not even thinking about the need for possible policy adjustments. In any case, Wall Street closed lower on Wednesday, with the S&P suffering its biggest one-day percentage drop since February, as inflation data fueled concerns over whether interest rate hikes from the Fed could happen sooner than anticipated. In fact, all three major US stock indices ended the session deep in the red following the Labor Department's April Consumer Prices report, which, as I said earlier, showed the biggest rise in nearly 12 years. The report was, of course, hotly anticipated by market participants who've grown increasingly worried over whether current price jumps will defy the US Federal Reserve's reassurance by morphing into long-term inflation. Pent-up demand from consumers, flush with stimulus and savings, is colliding with a supply drought, sending commodity prices spiking, while a labour shortage drives wages higher. The topic on everyone's mind is obviously inflation, said Matthew Keitel, managing partner at the Keitel Group, a wealth management firm in Lenox, Massachusetts. It's something the Fed has been looking for, and they're finally getting their wish. The question is, how long will its fires run hot before starting to simmer? That concern is shared by Stuart Cole, head macroeconomist at Equi Capital in London. Going forward, the big question is just how long can the Fed maintain its dovish stance in opposition to the markets, Cole said, particularly if companies begin raising wages to encourage unemployed labour back into the workforce, in turn driving a large hole in the Fed's transitory inflation argument. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 1.99%. to 33,587. The S&P 500 lost 2.14% to 4,063, and the NASDAQ dropped 2.67% to 13,031. Of the 11 major sectors in the S&P 500, 10 closed in negative territory, with consumer discretionary down the most. Energy was the sole gainer, advancing 0.1%, boosted by rising crude prices. Market-leading mega-caps, including Amazon.com, Apple, Alphabet, Google, Microsoft, and Tesla, fell between 2 and 3% as investors shied away from what many feel are stretched valuations. The CPI number being stronger than expected has led to further weakness in tech stocks, said Michael James, Managing Director of Equity Trading at Wedbush Securities in Los Angeles. Tech investors are concerned that higher rates are going to lead to multiple compression and less attractive valuations for tech names in a higher rate environment. The volatility index closed at 27.64, its highest level since March the 4th. And volumes on US exchanges were 11.82 billion shares, compared with the 10.44 billion averaging over the last 20 days. The data had an immediate impact on expectations for monetary policy, despite repeated assurances from the Federal Reserve that it will look through what it considers to be transitory spikes in prices. Short-term interest rate futures now reflect 100% certainty that the Fed will hike rates by the end of next year, rather than wait until 2023, as its official guidance indicates. The 30-year bond was down 0.85% to 2.395. The 10-year was down 1.07% to 1.685. The 3-year was down 1.29% to 0.352. And the 3-month was up 18% to 0.015. The dollar index was down 0.06% to 90.77. The Fed has indicated it doesn't expect a problem with the general level of prices, which it sees as different in nature from the abrupt shift in relative prices for certain categories of goods and services as consumer spending patterns adapt to the reopening of the economy. For the present, it is more concerned about the level of slack in the labour market, where over 16 million people are still claiming benefits related to unemployment, and the pace of hiring fell well short of expectations in April. The outlook is bright, but risks remain, and we are far from our goals, Fed Governor Lowell Brainard said on Tuesday. Remaining patient through the transitory surge in prices associated with reopening will help ensure that the underlying economic momentum that will be needed to reach our goals is not curtailed by a premature tightening of financial conditions. The numbers come against a backdrop in which a growing number of data points suggest greater price pressure ahead. Commodity prices have been on a tear all year, with lumber a key input for housing construction costs, more than doubling since the start of the year. But analysts argue that the Fed is unlikely to be swayed, not least since the central bank prefers to take its cues from a different measure of inflation, the Personal Consumer Expenditures Index. This index responds more quickly to shifts in consumer spending patterns and is more correlated to the experience of those on lower incomes. And trend PCE inflation is still below 2%. The Fed won't be impressed, even aside from temporary factors. And while Fed officials and economists acknowledge the temporary boost, it's unclear whether a more durable pickup in inflationary pressure is really underway against a backdrop of soaring commodity costs, trillions of dollars in government economic stimulus, and incipient signs of higher labour costs. I was surprised, Fed Vice Chairman Richard Clarida said after the report, "We have pent-up demand in the economy. It may take some time for supply to rise to meet demand." Of course, Fed Chair Jerome Powell has said the upward pressure on prices from the rebound in spending and supply bottlenecks will have only a transitory impact on inflation. But many disagree. Bond market expectations for the pace of consumer price inflation over the next 5 years surged earlier this week to its highest level since 2006. And the price data may complicate President Joe Biden's efforts to push through a multi-trillion dollar infrastructure spending package. Republican lawmakers have said more fiscal spending threatens to push up inflation even further. So here you have it. We face this critical question as to whether the inflation is real or whether it's not. But I want to end by reminding you of three quick facts. The first is, all the evidence that I've looked at suggests that increasing the money supply is not inflationary, that doing quantitative easing is actually potentially deflationary because it sucks money out of the real economy. And thirdly, a lot of the effects in those CPI figures are indeed transitory in terms of coming off a low base and relating to supply chain issues. So for me, the argument for sure that we are definitely facing into higher inflation, structurally speaking, has yet to be won. And in the round, with wages really not moving up very much, and so in real terms, people going backwards, and the stimulus programs coming to an end, it could be that people will spend less ahead, and that would be deflationary again rather than inflationary. So despite what the markets are saying, I would still hold your counsel and see how things develop. But today, of course, was a down day, and even cryptos caught the down pressure too, with Bitcoin and Ethereum both down as well. And by the way, gold and silver also dropped. So there's nowhere to hide at the moment. We need to watch these markets carefully, because if in fact confidence does turn negative, then the falls from this precipitous level could be significant and potentially quite quick. And that, by the way, would potentially damage the recovery and force the Fed to do more quantitative easing. So watch this space. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.